Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me, as always, the blissful days of future past to my miserable age of apocalypse. It's Dan.
Good evening, Scott. Good morning, Scott.
Yes, if we're going to be doing this podcast, it's generally going to be morning when we start. But unlike most mornings when I'm sleepy, I am pretty super pumped and electrocharged to be with you again. Mainly because I want to talk about Legion.
Good. I'm mildly distracted, but the protagonist on the show tends to be distracted himself, so I think it's okay. It's more authentic.
Right. It's funny, the timing of us recording just now, because in podcasts past, every once in a while, like, your cat has made an appearance, and I kid you not, right when I was about to start saying, you know, welcome to the Serious Drama, I could hear my cat digging in the kitty litter. I was thinking, I wonder if that's going to come through on the podcast. Really, that's how you're going to debut here, dude? I don't think dude's been on the podcast before. Anyway, I digress. Obviously, we are here to share our initial observations and reactions to the latest episode of Legion, which would be Chapter 2. But we kind of made a decision that based on just how detail-packed and downright dense the pilot and probably the show as a whole is going to be, it would be a good idea to lead off each podcast with a new segment, where we might help provide some additional insight by sharing more thoughts on last week's episode. So, I think we're going to call this new segment, More Thoughts on Last Week's Episode. Now, a lot of this happens because we get the chance to rewatch the episode, because this is definitely the kind of show where I think it bears watching, like, one more time through, you know?
Yeah.
So, the first thing I noticed was, like, in that amazing opening montage that ends with David essentially hanging himself, and then we dissolve to him talking to his sister while in the asylum. You know, if you want to get really crazy here, there's no real proof that he survived the hanging, so maybe everything we're watching isn't, you know, is the weird memories of a dead person or something like that. Although that doesn't make sense, memories of a dead person, but you know what I mean? It's kind of like we never find out how he survived a hanging.
Yeah, well, you know, like one of those life flashing before your eyes thing. I just assume that he, like, you know, transmuted the ropes matter, like, somewhere else, but who knows?
Right. So, and in that scene, when he is talking to his sister, I was wondering about this. Those old people in the corners of the room, are those supposed to be his parents? Are they even there, or is that just supposed to be another one of those in-his-head kind of things?
I just assumed it was, like, other patients or somebody just, like, hanging out there, but...
Well, it's definitely an old man and an old woman, but the more I think about it, and especially when we look at the... tonight's episode, it doesn't make sense that they would be his parents, so maybe they're just being screwy with us, just being weird.
Yeah.
So here's a question. Why is he sometimes wheeled around in a wheelchair and not other times? It doesn't make sense that it would be due to him taking the medication, because they're all going over there and taking medications, but they're not all being wheeled around. I mean, they don't make that clear, so it's a little strange.
Yeah, I don't know. The narrative on this show is so disjointed. It's hard to know, like, what's going on, what time, or if any of it's real or anything.
Right. Especially during that amazing first act of the pilot. Oh, so the very first time that we see Sid, we notice one of the first things she does is she adjusts her collar, like, to keep her neck covered up. And I have to say, it almost made me think, oh, it gave credence to the whole he hung himself, because maybe she's got rope burns on her neck too, or something like that. It was a very deliberate move, I thought.
Yeah.
So when she appears again, which is at the big group therapy session, there's, like, that blinding bright light behind her, which really makes her appear, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, like, angelic. And it's interesting that they do that right when she's walking in is when David and the doctor are talking about, you know, the devil with the yellow eyes. So I thought that was a kind of weird juxtaposition. They're talking about the devil and someone who kind of looks like an angel is appearing in front of them. So that was something I had noticed. What's the deal with the guy in the trees? In the bushes? What's going on with that?
Yeah.
I mean... Is it a patient who has got like a camouflage obsession or something? It's very strange. We do see him briefly later on in David's dream. He's actually seen way in the background, like bobbing his head to the music, which is kind of funny. But part of me also thought, since the way he's in the wall of trees, so to speak, it's almost like an omen of what's going to happen to Lenny.
So, right.
And speaking of trees, you notice there's a recurring image of trees and branches and tree limbs throughout that episode. You know, it's everything from the opening shot through to the psychiatrist's office and all around them. There seems to be a repeating motif throughout the episode. Another odd moment, which goes to the what is real and what is not, when there's a moment where the door opens to David's room, but we don't see the feet of anyone entering. But then we see that Sid is standing over him. That was kind of a strange moment if one wasn't paying attention. I thought that was a little strange. So you wonder, is she really there, or is this just in his mind? Once again, which is a running thing, obviously, throughout the show, I guess.
Yeah.
I also was wondering, what's with the dog in that partially covered cage, you know, when the interrogator is talking to, like, the guy in charge? And then right after we see that dog in the cage, which they kind of build up to. You know, it's like the cage is mostly covered and you're wondering what's in it. There's that red glowing light all around it. And then we see, I guess it's like a German Shepherd or something. And then the very next scene, the guy we call the Eye, puts a figurine of a dog down in front of David before he leaves the room. We never go back to that. It's never explained. I'm just like, is there something special about the dog? You know, is it a dog man? I don't know. This is something I felt we probably didn't get into enough in the first episode and really was up your alley. That blobby thing, which I guess is what we're supposed to be calling the devil with the yellow eyes. It's probably the most overt David Lynch reference in the episode, because I think even Hawley himself points out that he was inspired with that creature by like the startling creature that appears in the diner scene in Mulholland Drive. And really, even more so, the way this creepy evil thing lurks in the corners or on the very edges of the screen or reality is very reminiscent of how we first encountered Bob in Twin Peaks. And the more I thought about that, the more I realized, yeah, there is kind of a very Bob-like quality there. So,
yeah, I definitely picked up on that, even though I think I was spending more time trying to figure out if it was like some X-Men villain or something. It kind of reminds me of you know, something that I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Yeah, I guess it's one of the benefits of not being familiar with the comics. So I'm not, unlike some other shows that we talk about where I find myself doing that as well. I'm kind of freed from that. I don't have to be thinking about, you know, the comic book stuff that much, except for one thing about tonight's episode, but we'll get to that obviously when we talk about tonight's episode. One question I had, which I wrote notes down, but I think this episode kind of answered it for me, was who actually had the ability to, you know, make the walls transmute the way they did? Because I thought maybe when Sid and David switched places, that was somehow her ability. But I do believe we find out in this episode, nope, that's all David.
Right.
David's really kind of a god, the more you think about his abilities,
quite yeah. frankly.
Quick note on the music, because we did a lot of mentioning about those 60s Brit pop songs that were used, and we're actually using in our own podcast a little bit of each. One song we kind of left out that was really strikingly used was when David unleashes his powers during the interrogation. They use a track from Jane's Addiction called Up the Beach, which is interesting because this isn't no 60s song. This is, you know, from like, you know, I guess the 90s, I guess. But it still has a very trippy, retro, psychedelic power chord quality to it. So it really works in that scene really well. That's definitely one of the highlight moments, I think, of the entire episode, is when he just goes nuts. Closing it on the wrapping this up. Is the manifestation of Lenny that we see later in that episode, do we think it's purely another delusion, another way of his subconscious talking to him? Or, and this may lend itself more to the comic book stuff, as far as I know, has he actually absorbed Lenny's personality, and maybe she's an actual entity inside him at this point? Did you have any thoughts about what Lenny really is at this point?
Well, it could be either one, and I think it kind of depends on how much they want to lean on the comics, because that is kind of like the kind of the your latter option is the kind of thing that the character could actually do in the comics. So it'll be interesting to see if it's like we're seeing a like somebody that Dexter would be talking to, or like like an actual person that's kind
right.
of gonna pop.
I wonder if it's something that we might learn. Well, I'm hoping it'll be something that we learn as the show goes on, and so in a way, it's kind of, especially for people who don't know the comic books, it becomes kind of a reveal that, oh, to some extent she does still exist, it's just she has become part of him, as opposed to, oh, that's just another sign of him being crazy or something. Here's a question. He smashes his childhood lamp, you know, the one that's shaped like a rocket ship with the constellation shade and everything, but then a little bit later when he's going to sleep, it looks like it was put back together, which really seemed like too complicated a job for anyone could possibly glue that thing back together, but there it was. A little strange. Anything else? Oh, something that me and you talked about briefly. I think it wasn't on the podcast. The way the screen goes wide when David is on the payphone reminded me a little bit of when you're watching like a Christopher Nolan movie that has certain scenes filmed in IMAX, and all of a sudden the screen proportions change while you're watching it. I mean, because they kind of just went, "Oh, we're going to go super wide screen now." And although it's shot that way, I don't know if it needed to be shot that way. I think he was just maybe. Holly was just going for a certain cinematic technique in that scene, because I had that sort of, I think that's the thing with the whole 70s, you know, paranoid thriller kind of quality to it. And that's maybe why he did that, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Speaking of the 70s, did we talk about like when we think this show takes place or not? Because
we did not.
Yeah.
I think they're being very coy about that, because they're definitely doing a lot of retro looking stuff to make you think, oh, this is like the late 60s or something, or early 70s. But then, although it takes a while before we actually do see any cars, when we do see a couple cars, we're like, no, that's a little bit more modern. Okay. So, and I know Hawley himself said that he was greatly inspired by the look and feel of X-Men First Class, which takes place in the 60s.
Right.
So that informed him. You know what it kind of makes me think of, in a way, to lend itself to a different comic book property and movie? I think of, like, the first Tim Burton Batman movie, which, on one hand, was supposed to take place in present day, but a lot of that movie has a very retro, almost Art Deco look to it, where,
right.
You know, the technology is obviously present, but the cars look like they're out of the 40s. And so, and even the cartoon did that as well. So I wonder if he was kind of doing that, where it's such a fantasy world that there are elements that, you know, look like they're still stuck in the 60s or 70s, but they clearly have, you know, technology and other things which are present day.
It's definitely interesting that we were able, you know, talk about it for an hour and never really gave it too much thought, but I think it just kind of like, you know, we were that absorbed in the story where when it takes place isn't super relevant. It's just kind of like a, you know, a little curiosity.
Right. I also think it therefore makes it even that much more unlikely that this could ever in any way be crossed over with the other X-Men properties because of that, because it just doesn't, at least the other movies and such, because it seems to be taking place in its own weird sense of limbo. Which kind of also lends itself to the concept of maybe what we're watching is all in this person's mind. And that might also be why it's kind of hard to really get a grasp on things. I know that's not what it's supposed to be, but it could be. It could be.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I mean, we'd be, you know, seeing a character that has some, you know, issues during his childhood. Maybe, you know, he feels that he's, you know, like never really progressed past that and just kind of like, you know, just hangs out and sees everything through like a, you know, 60s/70s look.
Right. It could. There's so many possibilities. I mean, odds are it's probably a lot more straightforward than we're thinking, and they're just having fun with art direction. But either way, we're in for the ride because it's a gorgeous looking show no matter what.
Right. Yeah.
All right. I think we can pretty much, unless there's anything that comes to mind, I think we can probably put a bow on chapter one at this point. You think so?
Yep.
All right. So with closing the book on chapter one, we can turn the page to chapter two. And yes, that was not one, but two bad book puns. I got to say, I was still flying high like a pen drawn to a dude's cheek after last week's pilot. The way we talked about how Noah Hawley directed it, his vision fusing, the cinematic elements of Kubrick and Wes Anderson, and of course David Lynch. I was really prepared for a bit of a come down with a more, quote unquote, regular episode. I mean, I know we got Michael Uppendahl directing this one, and we've talked about him being one of the more celebrated TV directors of like Fargo and Mad Men. So we knew it wasn't going to be a paint by numbers kind of a job. But, speaking of David Lynch, I was kind of wondering if it was going to be a little bit like how the way I reacted, 25 years ago when I saw the premiere of Twin Peaks, and then I watched the second episode after the pilot, or how I felt about the second episode of Lost after the incredibly cinematic premiere of that show. I mean, there was at least a little bit of a come down in both those instances, I thought.
Yeah, I definitely think it was necessary here, though. I mean, you couldn't just have every episode just be completely freaking, cracked out.
Yeah, it would be too much to deal with. Although, it would be kind of gorgeous and beautiful at the same time, just to have a mindfuck week after week. Up there, I dropped the first F-bomb. Would you believe in the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend podcast that I did with Jason? I didn't curse once, I don't think. It's amazing.
Wow.
Anyway, back to this. To reiterate once again, as we're talking about the series roughly, an hour after it aired, this is more of our initial reactions rather than a true blow-by-blow recap, because we expect if you're listening to the podcast, you've already watched the episode, so you don't need that much of a refresher course. So I will try to keep the recap aspect somewhat brief, because we really want to zero in on any details or observations in the discussion that follows. And of course, right now that I've said that, the recap will go on forever. You just know that's what's going to happen. So, with that, let me sketch a reasonably quick picture of just what happened in Chapter 2. Now, you know how I mentioned a few moments ago there was a recurring image of trees in the first episode, including the opening shot of that episode? Hey, this episode also opens with a shot of trees, so I don't know if they're a symbol of growth, of permanence, of life, of being rooted in reality. Hey, that's the stuff of analysis, not recapping, so I'm going to shut up. Let's move this along. As a rather sad female-led version of the Talking Heads song Road to Nowhere plays, we pick up moments after the premiere left off, with David and Sid and some new friends taking off down the river. I wonder why they didn't play Take Me to the River. Anyway. And they're heading to a place called Summerland. And here we get something that we really didn't get much of in the pilot, a fair amount of straightforward exposition, which I think is here just to give us a basic grasp of things while still leaving the details of so much both mysterious and really giving us more to try to interpret and determine on our own. So what we find out is that Jean Smart's character, her name is Melanie Bird, and she's clearly the leader of this group. This Summerland facility, it's for people that are like David, people with special abilities. I don't think they ever actually use the word mutants in this episode, although they did in the previous episode, but any X-Men fan knows that's what they're talking about. The people who were questioning David before, and who are now appear to be after him, they're a special secret branch of the government called Division 3. Where they like to experiment, recruit, and most likely kill people like David. But Melanie wants to help him. She wants to convince David that he's not sick at all, as he's been told since he was a child, and all those voices in his head. She tries to guide him to focus just on one, calling his name, because now we are told that David is also a telepath. Now at the facility, there's another mutant named, I'm thinking his name is pronounced Tamani, helps David with his memory work, where David, Melanie, and Tanami himself enter David's memories. At first, it's wondrous to David walking through the museum of his mind, but a memory of his unseen father, who we're told at least twice was an astronomer, telling a rather horrific bedtime story, the world's angriest boy in the world, I love that they got world both twice in there, sets David off, and it becomes a far more unpleasant experience for him. Still, as we continue to dive into David's memories, we pick up on things that appear to be mostly real on the face of them, how his girlfriend Philly left him, and the one I wasn't sure about until later on in the episode, how it appears maybe he did know Lenny before they were committed to Clockworks. But even looking back during this very recap, I still come to wonder if that's a present-day delusion mucking about in his memories or not, as I do find it somewhat hard to believe that he knew Lenny before the asylum. In addition to the memory work with Tanami, and what hasn't happened quite yet but we're told is going to be happening, these talking sessions with Melanie Bird, David is also put through this machine which is similar to an MRI scanner, and then we meet Bill Irwin's wonderfully named character, Carrie Loudermilk, What Carrie, not to be confused with the woman Kerry, is doing is trying to map the memories of David's mind with the most bizarre hodgepodge of a technology one could ever hope to see. It looks like, quite frankly, something out of Brazil. And in between all these sessions with either Tonomy or Loudermilk, David does get to spend time with his anchor in reality, his girlfriend Sid. We do get a bit of clarity about what happened at the asylum when they switched places, something I was wondering in those questions earlier on this podcast. And while Sid blames herself for what happened to Lenny, it was clearly done with David's abilities. As Lenny said, it was like giving a newbie a bazooka. So, with telekinesis, telepathy, and even more, you start to understand why it's been repeated several times in this series that David might be the most powerful mutant ever. Later on, while in a session with Loudermilk, David sees something that isn't a memory. It's something happening now. Unless maybe it's a vision of the future, but I believe they do say it's the present. He sees his sister Amy, who's getting stonewalled at the asylum where he had been kept, no pun intended from last week's events. And even as he appears to her as a flickering phantom, yet another ability, it looks like she's about to be taken away by the Eye, who's leading, a team from Division 3. So by the end of the episode, David is determined to leave to save his sister, and Sid tries to convince him to stay, learn more about how to use his powers, and then they can save her. She's convinced they won't kill his sister because she's clearly being used as bait. And on a more predictable show, David would still feel that he has to go and leaves. But things aren't that easy to foresee on a show like Legion, and so David stays. And instead, we close with the Eye, looking like he might be planning to use electric eels as some form of torture on poor Amy. And we close out with a really cool version of Thomas Dolby's Hyperactive. Oh, okay, so that was my recap. I hope I don't know how long it took me to do that, but hopefully it wasn't too long and arduous for you.
It was 17 minutes.
17 minutes?
No, I'm fucking with you.
God damn you. I know how long we've been podcasting for. It wasn't those, maybe 7 minutes. Okay, so let's chat a little bit about this. We get to see and learn a bit more about Melanie Bird. So what did
Yeah,
you read?
what happened in the first few minutes? Because I missed that. The first
Okay.
thing I saw was like them walk, like her and him walking through the grass somewhere, and then I didn't miss everything before that.
Oh, so the first thing you came upon was being inside his memory then, I think. Okay. Sorry, Dan's DVR cut off the first few minutes of the episode, so I should have recapped that part more heavily for him. Basically, they're all in one of those like motor raft things as they're speeding down the river to get away from where they were last time. We don't see or hear anything more about that guy who was able to fling people away, which I was kind of bothered by that. I was like, I want to see more about that guy. They bring him to the facility. She's continuing. She's basically filling in what they how they want to help him. They want to help him write his own story and all this. They want to help prove that he's not sick. These are just his powers, and they'll help him learn how to use them and understand them. But first, he has to do something called memory work as well as talking work to really, kind of put himself back together. And there's also clearly more to it than that. Then they're in a room where there's a table, and the three of them hold these handles that are on the table,
Yeah, I saw that part.
and then they get into and then they get into his memories from that point on, and then you're pretty much caught up.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
So with her, she seems very determined to help him. She, as I just said, she wants to prove that he's not sick, but also teach him about how to use his abilities and all such. You wonder, because of a couple of things that I mentioned in the episode, if we should just purely believe her or what her other motivations are here. Because I wonder if she also views David as possibly like the most powerful weapon they can lay their hands on, in their fight against Division 3 and others of that kind. It's almost like their own nuclear bomb or something. And Tonomy says something later on in the episode that referring to her calling David the key. So I was wondering, like, the key to what? The key to winning? The key to something far more grander? I was kind of curious about all of that.
Yeah, it is cool that we don't know what direction that these characters could be playing in, and going back to the comics, if Bird could be more of a Professor X type, or if like somebody more like Magneto and just like have some like plot that they want to use him for. So and it, could be anything. I mean, they could just be like part of the government department. So I mean, it
Right.
could be.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Anyway, obviously, I feel it's going to be one or the other. It's either she's really is doing this for the right reasons, or there's something a bit more. I don't. I mean, I don't think. she's going to turn out to be evil, but
Yeah, they'd be kind of risky.
it might not be quite as pure as she's setting herself up to be. I mean, he still might be considered a tool or a pawn or a weapon rather than truly trying to help him. At least in her performance, she doesn't do anything to specifically give it away one way or the other. It's not like it's not like there's that look where there's a raised eyebrow or too long a stare or something which makes you go, ooh, there's something going on there. So they treat it very straightforwardly. Something you just mentioned is the next thing I wanted to ask you about. Probably one of the only times I will bring up something that's comic book related here, because you mentioned Professor X. Now, as I think was mentioned in our previous podcast, comic book wise, Professor X is supposed to actually be his father, right?
Yes.
So what's going on here? Do you think, now the question is this, do you think they're either A, just forgetting about that, which would seem to be a rather huge thing about the character to just like pretend didn't happen, or B, what, I don't know if maybe this happened in the comics for all I know, was he or is he being, was he raised by some sort of like foster father and Professor X didn't have anything to do with him, his childhood growing up perhaps?
Yeah, I don't remember who he was raised by, but it definitely wasn't by Xavier in the comic. So it this could just be, like that.
Yeah,
But definitely.
that makes the most sense that, he will be revealed to be, Professor X's son. I do think that's too huge a thing to just to leave out of the series, even if they're trying not to go to the comics too much. But of course, they also go out of their way to keep his father's identity secret in this episode, where it's commented on in the episode that they can't see him. And they're saying,
Yeah.
that's on David. He can see him if he wants. He just has to look up. And we never, his father's always just a shadow. So, and I don't think they're doing that just because, oh, they cast someone cool. I doubt that. I mean, I'm sure it isn't cool, but I was wondering about it because of the whole Professor X thing. Although, and then I was thinking like, but Professor X couldn't have raised him. Doesn't even, that wouldn't make sense. Professor X wasn't a suburban dad,
I kind of would like. I'd be okay with it if they never mentioned Professor X or Magneto or the X-Men or anything, and just kind of like we're using the general outline of like the X-Men concept and just like telling their own story. I mean, there's mutants. The government doesn't quite know how to handle that, and they just kind of like go with that and just have pretty much all mostly original characters. That'd be kind of cool and different. I guess we'll see what they do.
I absolutely agree. I mean, the way this story is already being told, I don't think it really necessitates any overt comic book connections, which might upset some people who are bigger comic book fans or they do more comic booky podcasts about the show or whatever. I'm thrilled because it just makes it for me a bit more of a pure sci-fi. As well as other wacky genres kind of pushed in there. And the way that people keep talking about it is like, oh, it's a new superhero show. It's like, not
Yeah.
really. Unless you equate anyone with abilities, therefore being a superhero, but that doesn't work for me. I don't think that's accurate, personally.
I do kind of worry that there might be some external meddling that might happen if the show gets continues to have good ratings and gets popular, and they might want to try to stick the things, do things together in some fashion. I mean, FX doesn't tend to do a lot of screwing around stuff like that, but I mean, Fox is their daddy, and the X-Men movies don't tend to be super well regarded anymore. So they might want to cash in any way they can here. So hopefully, if that's what they want to do, and that isn't what Holly and his people want to do, hopefully they can stick to their guns and resist some of that. I mean, if they do something like that, I'm sure it'd be okay, but I'd prefer them not to have to do it, because history shows that kind of thing doesn't always work out well for the creators and
Right.
quality.
Oh, I think as long as Holly's in charge of the show, that hopefully that won't be something to worry about because he's a very distinct creative force with a vision, and FX pretty much, from what I understand with this show, both FX and Marvel have pretty much gave him carte blanche. He didn't basically have to get almost anything okay. Everything he presents in, they're like, okay, which is pretty impressive. But it also shows you the kind of credibility he's gotten from what he's done with Fargo. I mean, when any creator, and that's the thing about television, when you're the creator, when you're the writer creator of these shows, and you do something that's really significant, you are really powerful. It's always surprising just how powerful you are in the game. And that's what he's done with Fargo. And that's probably what Sam Esmail has done with Mr. Robot. And you can think of all those shows like that. So hopefully that'll remain true for this show, and we won't see any meddling from Fox. The people can't even get one Fantastic Four movie done decently, so hopefully they won't screw around with this. Now, I thought it was interesting that within his memories, we have memories of a therapy session. Here with Dr. Poole, who's played by Scott Lawrence, who you and I will recall was the counselor on the final season of Rectify, actually.
I like that guy. He's got a good gravitas, so I'm glad to see him getting some work and good shows like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I like that these are the kind of roles he's getting, because he's like, yeah, he's kind of a guy I want to talk to. But what's interesting is he's having a memory of a therapy session. But what he's going through, getting into his memories, that's sort of like a form of therapy as well. And then if you start thinking about this episode and the previous episode, it's like almost most scenes with David seem to be forms of different types of therapy sessions. I mean, you can even say the interrogations, to a certain extent, are like therapy sessions, because they're making him going over parts of his life, part of what he's done, his memories, whatever. They all, no matter who he seems to be with, he keeps having these kind of face-to-face sessions with people. It's an interesting thing that keeps happening throughout this episode, and the last episode, which really makes you know it's about a lot of this is about David and his mental condition, and whether he really is, sick or not, as Melanie said, he's not as such. Okay, so here's a question. I don't think either of us have an answer for this one. What's the story behind that weird little time jump that happens in David's memories? Because I even noticed that before Tonomy says it later on. There's that weird little kind of glitch, I think they call it. And then when he tries to press further to fix it, suddenly they're knocked back to one of David's childhood memories when he was like, I don't know, 7, 8. I don't even know how old the kid was at that point. Do you think it's like some sort of suppressed memory he's trying to keep out, or what do you think was going on there?
Yeah, it's probably something like that. It's just hard to tell with how, cracked out the show is. It could be so many different things, or it could be nothing, and they're just screwing with us. But it definitely was, I mean, it was noticeable, but it was really, I thought it was cool that then like other characters noticed it after the fact instead of, it just kind of like the show took on like another layer there that I appreciated.
It's weird. It was, and again, no pun intended for those who've listened to our other superhero-related podcast, but it was a very meta moment, so to speak. Pun intended a little bit, because we noticed it, and it was like, oh, they noticed it. It's like, let's rewind. It's almost like they were saying, let's rewind that tape back again. What just happened there? Why is that happening there? One thing that occurred to me is I was thinking that maybe that little glitch or that time jump, whatever, one possibility at least, is that maybe it's connected to that whole, I'll just call it the devil with the yellow eyes, because I hate saying the word blobby all the time. Maybe it's somehow connected to that, because that seems to be the most disturbing thing that keeps popping up, and that he's also trying not to mention to anybody, even when he's questioned about that. It seems like you saw something, a flash or something, whatever, and that's the one thing he doesn't seem to have admitted to anybody as of yet. Whether it be in the present day or in his memories with Dr. Poole. So I'm wondering if somehow it's connected to that, maybe. I don't know. Oh, and speaking of that, by the way, did you think when the closet door was opening that maybe we were going to get another, at least a little flash of those yellow eyes or something? Or do you think, yeah, I
It was
was.
really.
That was.
I was expecting it, and I thought it was really a different choice. It didn't happen there, but the scene was very unsettling.
What makes it really interesting is that's something that they could, if you had just directed it where it was just purely from David's POV, so you just saw the door opening a crack, and maybe we did a close-up of the darkness, but not. But several times we get the POV from inside the closet. Now, that's what makes that very strange to me, because when you do that, then you're implying that someone is watching from the closet. and yet it never happens. So it was a, it's a, it's a very interesting technique they chose because they really screwed with us there. I like that they did because it was like, again, the show is not predictable. So I like that we can't be sure of what's going on here.
Yeah, it's definitely defying our expectations.
I wonder if somehow that's related to the glitch, even for all I know. And in which case it goes back to maybe it's a devil thing, maybe there's something else lurking about. Oh, so speaking of the therapy session and something else I said in the recap, Lenny. Let's see if here's another one I think of the mysteries of the series. Now, do you think he really actually did know her before Clockworks? Or was that somehow either David's own delusions, interfering with his own memories, or maybe the concept that Lenny's personality has somehow, has been ingested into him, and she's like projecting herself into his memories or something like that.
Yeah.
What did you make of that? Or what was the first guess?
I
But or you have no idea.
have no yeah, I have no idea. I just hope that it's not something we've seen like a zillion times before. Whatever it is, I think that there's a pretty good chance that it'll be something that's more fresh take than what we're used to.
Well, it's interesting. Almost none of those are anything I've seen. I mean, the only one that would be the one I guess that would be the normal explanation, which it could very well be that yes, he knew her. And that's and these are just pure memories. But they don't feel that way. They really don't. So I'm not sure what's going on here, which kind of makes it fun. I mean, again, there is the issue with this show of the unreliable narrator to a certain aspect, especially when we're going through his memories, we're not sure what's true or not. So I guess I'm hoping that might be something that becomes more clear as we go on. There is something interesting about that though. In the Lenny memory, they do that thing where they put the drug in the frog and they end up getting high off the vapors from the frog, right? Now, the vapors are actually mentioned in the therapy session with Dr. Poole. And when it's first brought up, he claims that was just a voice in his head he was responding to. So that kind of goes to the idea that Lenny is just another one of the voices in his head, i.e., one of the personalities that's inside him. Although it's still interfering with a memory, but it's very trippy. Oh, since I've said his name several times here, I know that we didn't mention the obvious, the super duper over the top obvious Kubrick shout out in this series and in the first episode when they actually named the Nut House Clockworks,
Yeah.
But I kind of enjoyed that slightly more subtle thing they did in this episode because his name is David, and his name is repeated a million times throughout the series and throughout this episode, but he's seeing a doctor named Poole. I was thinking of
Right.
David Bowman and Frank Poole, a little 2001 for you there.
Yeah.
One more thing. I mean, I really enjoyed the new characters we were introduced to in this episode. I like the Tommy guy. I thought he was a lot more interesting than I was expecting him to be. I got a real kick out of him in this episode. There's a lot more to him than I was expecting. I like that they are taking the time to at least build these other characters as opposed to being, they could very easily be just one or two dimensional type characters. I like that they did a little bit more with that one.
Right, yeah, they definitely did good work making him interesting at this point.
But even with the characters that we came to know better in this episode, like that character, the new Bill Irwin character. Bill Irwin's just great to watch. He's just fun. I love seeing him in anything just about. And of course, Gene Smart's character. I gotta say, two episodes in, I think I fell in love even more with Sid after this episode than even the pilot. All I could think was, oh my God, how agonizing it must be to not even be able to touch her. Because I'm watching, I'm like, oh my God, how are you not kissing her? How are you not just stroking her hair? So, now, was the fact that they touched or kissed, I guess, in the first episode, is that what caused the switching to happen? Is that, and in a sense, is that her ability?
Yeah,
Unintended.
I'm pretty sure that's it.
Okay, that makes the most sense. So that would probably be her soul ability, not as opposed to what David, where David seems to have, I don't know if there's anything David can't do. The more it seems, the more we seem to find out about him. All right. So other than that, I definitely did enjoy the episode. I think it was as we said, considering second episodes tend to be a bit of a come down from really good pilots. Well, pilots that aren't that great, that doesn't happen with. I thought this worked well to try to give us a bit more groundwork as far as how the show is going to proceed. So what, and they still got to be trippy or wacky or and have their set of mysteries. Like there's plenty that we didn't even mention. Like, wait, he's in the MRI machine, he freaks out, next thing you know, he's laying there just on the floor, and the MRI machine is like in the courtyard. Like he's destroyed or it's burned out or something. I'm not sure how he did that without it. I don't know if it phased through the wall or he just made it appear somewhere else. Guy has got some, he's like magic, this guy. But
But
I would go on.
they were able to be quirky and fun, but still let us have a little chance to take a breather after last week. So
Yeah.
it's nice.
And it wasn't even that long an episode, by FX standards. It only ran a little bit past the hour mark, so that was kind of nice. I really, as much as I do like the show and how quickly the pilot went by, I would appreciate if the episodes more often than not try to adhere to closer to the 1 hour format whenever possible. I mean, it'll be okay
Right.
if they run over a little bit. Fargo certainly did. Better Call Saul occasionally did, but I don't want, as we talk, we don't want the Sons of Anarchy effect. I don't want like an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes every week. That might drain me, I think.
Yeah.
All right. I know that you're quite weary yourself, speaking of being drained. So should we wrap up this podcast?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything that we didn't touch on. Yeah.
Well, if you, nope, I'm giving you the chance. I don't want to step on you. All right then. Well, if you did enjoy this podcast, and I hope you did, you'll probably enjoy our Facebook page as well. You can find us on Facebook as the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can also find us on the iTunes as, again, the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. And finally, you can also find us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. Dan and I will be getting together with the rest of the STVD All-Star Squad, I guess probably in about 24 hours, to talk
Yep.
about a couple of the more traditional quote-unquote superhero shows that we like to talk about. And we'll be back next week with any additional thoughts about this episode, as well as covering Chapter 3.
Yes, it's been fun. I know I sound out of it, but it was still enjoyable recording. So thanks for doing the heavy lifting tonight.
We'll say that you were just so floored by the episode and the show that you were just, more speechless than usual. Next
Well,
week I'll make you do all the talking.
yeah. Last week I was all cracked out, and this week I'm just like taking it slow, just like the show.
Gotcha. All right. Well, with that, again, thanks for sticking around to do this tonight. Hopefully we'll get this out in a timely fashion. And thanks to everybody out there for listening. And until next time, good night, everybody.
Good night.